You're listening to CFRN, the Christian Financial Radio Network.
Hey, hey.
Hey, good morning.
How are you this morning?
Very good, sir.
Good, good, good. Sorry I missed you yesterday.
Oh, yeah, sir, we missed you.
I don't know what happened.
I don't either. We called you.
I know. I don't know what happened. I'm like, well, about 2 hours later, I'm like, wow. We didn't connect today.
You know, I just thought based on, I figured you probably had things going on, something you had to do, so.
Yeah, it was just a misconnect. Anyways.
Okay. Well, here we are.
Here we are. Well, buyer's doing a beautiful job. We've broken the high of the year twice now, yesterday and then again today. Buyer's doing a beautiful job of advancing off of that 870 defense, and we talked about what the buyers had to do. They had a number of objectives. The first objective was, of course, to defend some price, whether it was 850, 870, you know, the 810, 775. As we talked about, all we were doing is fine-tuning that defense position. And the buyers did come in at 870, and from that 870 defense, they had to do some things. They had to get back above the 50-period moving average on the daily chart and the negative positive break line on the year at 903. They had to break the last set of highs at 928 by 930, and then we had to break the high of the year at 956. And we've accomplished every single one of those objectives. And we currently have a 80-point leg underneath us, 85-point leg. The buyers have taken us from break-even last Tuesday to a 5.5% return for the year on the S&P. Buyers doing a beautiful job. So there was two schools of thought, to use the summer months to get deeper, better entries. And the buyers are currently defending the 870 and put the S&P up positive on the year. And now here's the issue with putting the S&P positive this early in the year. They have to hold it. They have to hold this positive position now. They've taken a shallow defense, 870, for all the reasons that the 870 did, you know, why it was defended. And now the buyers from that 870 defense have accomplished their objectives. And now, with this being positive, they have to hold this or continue to advance to create even more padding. Now, if we turn around, now currently the mode of operation for the buyers is to take profit off the table. We broke the high of the year yesterday by 0.2 of a point.
Right.
Today,
yeah,
today we broke it by a half a point.
Right.
So what the buyers are currently doing, their mode of operation currently, is to take profit. Now, that doesn't mean the next time we test the high of the year, we won't panic and accelerate to the top side. But that just means currently, their current dynamic, their current mode of operation, if you will, is to take profit off the table when we break that high of the year. But they are still breaking highs. So,
technically, yes, they are.
Good that we keep advancing. We keep breaking highs, right?
Yeah.
Not good for breakout traders.
Yeah.
Not good for breakout traders. And why do breakout traders get hit like this? Well, they don't look at how much energy that we've used. So yesterday, for example, when we broke the high of the year, within the first 2 minutes of the market being open, we'd started that move the previous day down at 941. So we had run 16, 17 points to break the high of the year. This morning, to break the high of the year, you could either take the 943 low of yesterday or the 948 low of this morning. Whether you take either one of those, we had, you know, a good 10 points energy underneath us from the shallower 947, 948, and from 943 we had a good 15 points underneath us to make that run. So we've had a lot of energy underneath us needed to accomplish those objectives, and therefore the follow-through is waning. And that's what happened. It's just the way that it works.
And that is what happened.
Yeah. So at this point, the buyers have broken the high of the year, broken the high of the year. They keep advancing. We keep extending the daily leg But every leg, folks, every leg gets a top. And this current leg is 85 points. Take a look at your daily chart. We have beautiful green candles, a green leg on the daily chart. Buyers accomplishing every one of their objectives. So the only question is, how much further will they be able to push it? And if we cannot break a new high on the smaller time frames, if we can't break a new high in the 10-minute chart, the 3-minute chart, that opens the door for a top on the daily chart to finish this leg. So the smaller time frames always give the heads up on a top or finishing a leg on a bigger time frame. So the daily chart, what's going to set the stage for that leg to finish would be the smaller time frames not being able to break a new high. And just within the last 20 minutes, we just went up and tested the high of the year, the high of today, mm-hmm. which was 957.03.
Right.
We got to 956.53. We got within a half a point of the high of the day, and we rolled over. This is the kind of action that sets the stage for a top on the daily to finish that daily leg.
A little bit of a heads up.
Mm-hmm. It's exactly what it is. A heads up that it's getting tired.
Or in poker, what they would call a tell.
There you go. It's a great example. So what you've got is the buyer struggling with breaking new highs and exploding, getting that panic acceleration, short squeeze, breakout trader's dream, which is to break a high and explode, right? That's what we have not been getting. And then on top of it, we just now tested the high and rolled over. So we've got some indications that the market's tired. Well, of course, we've got an 85-point leg underneath us. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
It's like, yeah, how much more can it push? So that doesn't mean I start to look for shorting opportunities to pick the top. You know, does that make sense? What it does is it helps me to understand that the buyers are struggling, so it just reaffirms to me to take conservative exits off of any potential defense that the buyers show interest in.
Now, I've talked a lot with the listeners over the last couple of days about the 38% retracement below us.
Right.
Which is an objective that, you know, at some point, the market is going to retrace,
right?
38%. Whether it's right now or not, I'm not so much convinced. Something I have failed to really talk about, and I just went out to my weekly chart, and I think it's worthy of mentioning. If we look at this down a leg, and I'm talking about the whole move
from October, yeah.
From the all-time highs.
Yeah, from October of 07.
Yeah, uh-huh. Down to this 666.
Uh-huh.
We also haven't hit the 38% retracement of that move.
Right.
That's up a little over 1,000.
Right. We have plenty of room to the upside.
Yeah, so I've been really talking a lot about that, you know, 38% retracement below us calling.
Right.
38% and deeper.
Right.
And I haven't really spent any time talking about the fact that, you know, there's still room up above us.
You better believe it.
And now, right before you came out, I did mention that if the market, I mean, I was talking about that topping action that it looks like we're getting there on the daily chart, potentially. Mm-hmm. I said, but you have to embrace the possibility that if this monster does break out to the upside, you can't be left holding the bag. You can't just say, well, okay, I'm short, because we're due for a retracement, so yeah, it took off, but I'm just going to hang out and wait for it to come back. That will break you.
No, you better believe
that
it
will. That will take your money. That will take your self-esteem. It will
crush you.
Yeah.
It will.
So you have to. So
trying to pick tops, looking for rest, knowing that it's going to come, that one dynamic alone has crushed more traders' account than anything else. I have watched traders through 04, 05, 06, 07 that kept trying to pick tops. We're going to get a retracement. It's going to come. The buyers aren't going to be able to keep pushing. And where do you think I came up with terminology like that's man's energy? Buyers building a leg is man's energy. Man can pound coffee at 11 o'clock at night and stay up all night. They can keep pushing. And it's a grinding push, grinding push. And people that are short just, I mean, I know one trader personally that held the position from December all the way to May. And it was a grinding, grinding, uptrending environment. And he kept looking for that deeper, better entry and deeper, better entry. And 2 days off the top, he got a margin call. Or within a few days, it was either 1 or 2 days. A few days off of the top, he got a margin call. And then guess what came?
The retracement.
The deeper, better entry, yes. And the retracement. Wow. So trying to pick tops, knowing that the buyers are going to eventually get tired, it's not fun to try to pick the top of man's energy. My traders will tell you, it's much more fun to find wake-up points than it is try to pick the top. Does that make sense?
Yeah, instead of saying, I think he's about to wake up, to say, hey, look, he's waking up.
Right. But waking up is always going to happen.
And it's hard to do. They even write songs about it.
Right.
Oh, no, that's breaking up.
Breaking up.
Oh, breaking up is hard to do. I'm sorry. Okay.
So the buyer's waking up versus the buyers getting tired are two completely different dynamics. Yes, the buyers will get tired. Yes, they will not be able to push a leg forever. But trying to pick that top, expecting the buyers to finally give up, you're fighting the tendency of the market, which is to break highs. You're fighting the market, which is driven, and most of the market is driven from a long position, not a short position. So, with that being said, let's put some things in time perspective. You're talking about that 38% reverse fib obstacle overhead, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So a couple things I want to point out here. At Trading Faith, can I help fix some thinking for you?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. When you go to bed at night and you rest, when you wake up in the morning, by resting, right, when you wake up, you have to get motivated again, slap water on your face, have a cup of coffee, realign yourself with your objectives. You follow me?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So we want to create some hard separators here in your mind and in the listener's mind. What we want to do is get you thinking in the market the same way that you think in your life. So in your life, you wake up and you have objectives. You follow me?
Mm-hmm.
You have to compartmentalize them and create their own environment for that. So the objectives are completely different than obstacles to those objectives. So you wake up and you splash water in your face, drink a cup of coffee, you align with your objectives. You follow me?
Mm-hmm.
Along the path to accomplish those objectives, you will in fact run into obstacles. Distractions, different things, right?
Right.
But as you are eyeballing your objections, do you also list out all the obstacles that's going to affect you from maybe getting there? Not typically.
Well, you know, some people do. It's called a negative and pessimistic way of thinking.
Right, but we're not going to talk about those people.
Okay, all right.
Because I'm not one of them, and you're not one of them, and I don't want to talk about them.
Okay.
Okay? So what we're going to talk about is the normal set of environment that says, I have objectives. And then as you're pursuing those objectives and you stay focused on those objectives, then what happens? Obstacles come. Correct?
Mm-hmm.
Some days more than others, some days less than others. But obstacles are something that are created. Distractions, whatever they happen to be, but you clearly have objectives, and then you have a separate, clearly defined package of obstacles. So you have to create a clear separation between them.
Mm-hmm.
Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. If I'm a basketball player, my objective is to score. That's my objective, right?
Mm-hmm.
I know I'm going to have obstacles to that. But in order to accomplish my objectives, I have to stay focused on the objectives and not give too much credence to the obstacles. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Football player, same thing. My goal is to score a touchdown. Talk about a running back. If you talk to a running back coach, you know what he's going to tell you, or a boxer's coach. When a boxer punches, do you think he's aiming for the guy's face?
Yeah.
No, he's not.
Okay.
He's aiming 5 feet behind the guy's face.
I gotcha.
No, it's absolutely true.
I gotcha.
He's not aiming for the guy's face. He's aiming for behind the guy's face. If you're a football player and you're a running back, are you focusing on the guy in front of you that's trying to tackle you?
No, you got your eye on the goal.
Yes. You're looking past him. 5 yards, 10 yards past him. He's just an obstacle to what?
To your objective.
You got it. Now, is this making sense?
Mm-hmm, sure.
So, you do not focus on the obstacle. You focus on the objective, and you overcome the obstacle. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
You run through them. Okay, so, clear differentiators. So, with that being said, what we have to clearly define here is you pointed out that 38 reverse fib overhead is up at 1,017. What I want to point out to you is that is not an objective.
No, it's not an objective, it's an obstacle.
Exactly.
Right.
So therefore, don't mix the two. So you said we have plenty of room overhead to get to an obstacle. That'd be like running down the field and say, I've got at least 10 yards till I run into the first defensive guy. He's not even on your radar. Does that make sense?
He better be on your radar, or he's going to cream you.
No, he's not. You're looking past him.
Okay.
If you're a good running back, you're looking past him. Does that make sense?
Yeah, but in your peripheral vision, you best have...
Yes, yes. But you know what, brother? Okay, fine. You just live with your obstacle.
No, I understand.
I'll tell
you
what. Why don't you just paint a big red flag on him and just love him? Why don't you just stop and hug him?
No, I understand. I understand your point. I do. And
Doesn't sound like you like my point.
No.
You want to embrace those obstacles.
No. It's there's nothing to like or dislike. They simply are.
Right.
They simply are what they are.
But the point here is to really see the objective. You have to see the objective. And obstacles are something that come along the way that you learn to deal with. Right. But your focus is on the objective. So. The reverse fib obstacles, the 38 reverse fibs that you pointed out up at 1,000, are not the buyer's objectives. So where are the buyers focused then? If I've got your attention and all the listeners' attention here, well, if that's not an objective, what are the buyers focused on as an objective? Does that make sense? Don't we have to know what the goal is to know what the objective is?
Sure.
Okay, so if you're looking at a bigger picture perspective, the first thing you have to define is what are your objectives. Then the secondary issue is what are the obstacles to those objectives. So what everybody has to understand is that the buyer's objectives are easy. All you have to do is look at a bigger picture weekly or daily chart, and every definable high is in fact the buyer's objective. So you're running back. Dwayne, if I'm going to send you in, I don't want you talking about obstacles. I'm going to send you in and give you the ball, okay? Do I want you talking about obstacles, or I don't want you talking about objectives? If I have three running backs standing there that all want to get in the game, and one guy's going, well, but there's those big linebackers, man. And the other guy's like, I see the goal. Who am I going to throw in there and give the ball to?
Right.
Okay. So, the objectives are clear. Look at your daily or weekly chart, and every definable high is, in fact, the buyer's objective. Getting back above the 50 and the 200 period moving average, buyer's objectives. It's really that simple. So, did we break the high of the year, which was a definable high back in January? Yes. Do we have two additional highs back in October of 2008? Yes, we have two of them. We have one at 1,007. We have another one at 1,044. Those are very clear objectives. We then have the next set of highs back up at July, August of 2007, up at 1,300. We then have another high based on the April-May highs at 1440. Those are the buyer's objectives. So what I want to do is help you to compartmentalize your thinking. Very clear-cut objectives. So we're above the 50 and the 200 period moving average in the daily chart. We're above the 50 period moving average in the weekly chart. The 200 period moving average in the weekly chart is up at 1250 currently. So there are some objectives. So three of the moving averages, major moving averages, we've gotten back above. So now what we have to do is break the highs of last October, September, October. Then we have to go break the highs of last July. Those are the objectives. So what we teach at Trading Faith on an intraday level is from any defensible position exactly what the objectives are, so the students lock and load and understand exactly what the buyer's objectives are. Then we engage what are the obstacles to those objectives. So the traders learn to compartmentalize the two issues. Objectives, clearly defined, then obstacles to those objectives. And that gives the traders the confidence to be able to take trade triggers in an effort to reduce their risk, to even make a run at one of those objectives. And as we then start to engage the obstacles, they can say, okay, I'm going to go ahead and get out of this trade now. But they have the confidence to engage the trade because of the objectives. And as you said, they're keeping that obstacle as a peripheral. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So as we've been pointing out, and you'll hear me, if the listeners out there have listened to me for any period of time, they will now understand the way that I present these dynamics. My sentence structure, my syntax, all of that is based on that very strict compartmentalization of objectives versus obstacles. So as we've been talking from that 870 defense, I have been talking about the buyer's objectives. Getting back above the 50 period moving average and the 903 negative positive break line, breaking the 930, breaking the high at 956. I've been talking about the buyers have to go break those highs. That's the first thing I talk about, is let's clearly define the objectives. Then after that's defined, then I'll say, and obstacles to those objectives are, so they're separate, two distinct separate categories. Otherwise, what ends up happening is a trader gets confused. If a general's looking at a map, they clearly define their objectives. Our objective is to take that town. Our objective is to take that bridge. Our objective is to take this military strategy. These are our objectives. Then after they clearly define their objectives, they define then what are the resources they're going to need to accomplish that. The supply line chain, the resources they're going to need to accomplish those objectives. Then they identify the obstacle. And if they have to, they reinforce their supply line in order to deal with the obstacles, but their first agenda is to identify objectives. Scripture says, without a vision, my people
perish. That is what it says.
Having your sights set on those objectives, understanding what those objectives are, and then, in a separate category, acknowledging what the obstacles are to those objectives. So again, you wake up in the day, I have objectives, get up, take a shower, get a cup of coffee. What are your objectives? Then you have obstacles that will present themselves. But if you keep your eye on the prize, if you keep your eye on the objectives, as soon as you can turn your focus away from the objectives and get focused on the obstacles, guess what happens to your objective? I see it all the time. I've got an 8-year-old daughter, just turned 8-year-old.
Mm-hmm.
I'll say, honey, we got to get in the car and go.
Right.
Time to go, hon. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
I watch this all the time. The objective is to walk out the door, get in the car, in the van, right?
Yeah, and go.
And go. That's the objective. What's my daughter do?
Yeah. Yeah, I know. I have the same issue.
Yeah. What happens? She gets her eye off of the door, and guess where she ends up going?
Where?
Wherever she's focused on.
Yeah, it's like with Gabe. You know, we go to the store.
Mm-hmm.
And we pull into the parking place, put the car in park, put the van in park, and it's like, Gabe says, what are we doing?
Yeah.
We're going in the store. Get out.
Time to get out.
Get out. So I get out, and I can't lock the doors until he gets out, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I'm standing there,
mm-hmm.
tapping my toe, Gabe. Get out. Get out. Oh, I am. I am. You stick my head back in. You still got the Nintendo game in his hand.
Yeah.
Or he's fiddling with this, or he's got to take one more drink of water. It's really become, it's one of those life issues that I've had to go, and just kind of start to deal with.
Yeah.
Because on a hot, sunny day, you know, standing there in the parking lot, 110 degrees, tapping your foot, you can get angry and short.
Yep.
Say things you regret later.
Right.
You know, it's like, when you see me put the car in park, it's now a contest.
Right.
How quickly can you get that seatbelt off and get that door open?
That's funny.
Okay. So, and now that it's a game,
mm-hmm.
now that it's a competition,
mm-hmm.
it's just a little easier, but anyway. It's another little parenting technique for all of you struggling parents out there.
Turn it into a game. But you know what? I'll tell you, it's really been a lesson for me to understand how unfocused or whatever you're focused on is what you'll end up doing. Your feet will follow. Your hands will follow. So if my daughter is you know, I'm saying, honey, it's time to get in the van. Let's go. Walk to the van, okay? And all of a sudden, next thing you know, she's playing with the dog's toy. You know, or, you know, it's just whatever she's focused on becomes a distraction. And I'll say to her, honey, you have to stay focused. You have to stay focused on what you're currently doing. If the teacher asks you to do something, you have to stay focused and keep seeing that objective, or else you're going to get sidetracked and unfocused.
Mr. Miyagi said it best. Focus, Daniel-san. Focus.
So, this whole conversation about objectives versus obstacles. What are the objectives? You have to clearly know what the buyer's objectives are and say, okay, if the buyer's objective is to go there, well, at least this is worth some movement to try to get there. I don't know if they're going to be able to get it, but at least they're going to try. And that gives the buyers and the traders confidence to be able to enter that trade as the buyers are attempting to get there. I don't know if they're going to be able to accomplish their objectives, but I'm certainly along for a little bit of the ride to even make a run at it. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
Hey, we're going to make another run at the high of the day. Okay, I'm going to get in and get a few points as we're trying to make a run at it. I don't know if they're going to be able to do it or not, but I know what they're trying to accomplish. I know what their objectives are. And then I also know what the obstacles are to those objectives. And that's really what trading is all about, is understanding how man flows to God's rhythm, knowing exactly what the buyer's objectives are, exactly what the obstacles are, and keeping those compartmentalized. And if you give too much credence to obstacles, guess what happens to a trader? If a trader knows the objectives and knows the obstacles, but they give too much power to the obstacles, guess what happens to the trader?
What?
They freeze.
Yeah, that's not good.
They freeze. They don't have the ability to enter a trade with any kind of confidence because they don't trust that the buyers are going to make, one, be able to accomplish their objective, or number two, they don't even give the buyers enough value that they're going to be able to make even a run to get a piece of that objective. So they just stand there in frozen fear that the obstacles are going to overcome everything. Remember, we talked about that negative thinking stuff?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Focusing on the obstacles will do nothing but freeze you as a trader. And more importantly, do you want to extrapolate it even further? They start to pick the top. They start to go short.
I hired an agent the other day to sell a piece of property.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, "Now I'm going to hire you for this job. Tell me what you're going to do. You know, different from anyone else."
Right.
So he started telling me, "Well, you know, I'm going to do this, and I got this website, and you know." I said, "Okay." I said, and he wanted a year's listing, and I said, "No, I'm not going to give you a year." I said, I realize that that you can't make someone buy a piece of property. I said, I understand that you can't do that. I said, but, and I'm not even really hiring you to sell the property. These are the words I used. I said, I am hiring you to create interest and activity.
Yep, good job. That's great.
He looked at me, and I go, "That's right." I said, "If you have to hire the Sons Gorilla to go dance out in the street, that's what you do."
Mm-hmm.
Banners, balloons, Kool-Aid, cupcakes, dancing girls. I don't care. Your job is to create interest and activity. If you create enough interest and activity...
we'll get it sold.
Yeah.
He's absolutely
like,
true.
He's like, "Okay, that's what I'm going to do." So...
good stuff, really.
We'll see if he pulls it off. Man, there's so many bargains out there. It's just such a tough... I just went and looked at another property the other day, and it was extraordinary.
Really?
Extraordinary. Last sold for $800 and change. So they just discounted it for $350. I did a walkthrough.
Yeah.
It's owned by M&I Bank. The agent's got it listed. He's called me 3 times in the past week. "Did you make up your mind?" "No." "Well, but I'm going out of town for a few weeks." "Okay, well, I'll be here when you get back."
Right.
But don't you want to submit an offer?" "No. Because the bank owns it. It's been on the market a while."
Right.
"They just reduced to $25,000.
Mm.
You know, it's now where... Isn't
that amazing?
You can literally wait until the point of exhaustion where they throw their hands up in the air.
Mm.
It's like those condos we bought.
Yeah.
You know, at $29,000, $1,500 to make it like brand new inside. Fresh paint, carpets, etc., blah, blah, blah. And the thing's got a cap rate of like 20% plus.
Goodness gracious.
Oh, it's really, there's an identical unit renting in that gated community for $1,000 a month. So I base my 20% cap rate on a $500 a month net.
Yep.
You know, just really trying to be incredibly conservative with the
right
numbers. But that one, we just bought it so Gabriel would have a decent place to live in.
Right.
So we're not even renting that one out. But you start looking at those kind of the opportunities that are out there. And I know what people listening, they go, "Well, yeah, but, you know, I don't have the cash. And, you know, the banks won't loan any money." I know.
Mm-hmm.
I understand that is truly a dilemma right now. Here we are, some of the greatest opportunities in the history of real estate,
mm-hmm,
and people can't get their hands on the cash to do anything about it. Frustrating for folks. So, but you know, if you put your mind to it, and make it a, you know, literally make it a job. I mean, it's worth it. I mean, if you can, a property that's and I'm not talking about just an inflated piece of residential real estate that was bid, you know, to the moon for no reason. I'm talking about a commercial property on Central Avenue, zone C3, that also, as a bonus, in the back of this 1.75 acre property, has a nice 4-bedroom home with a beautiful diving pool.
Wow.
And a 1-bedroom cottage. And a huge garage, and then a huge workshop that also has a kitchen and a bathroom. I mean, it's unbelievable. For $300,000.
Well,
all you got to do is buy it, sit on it, rent it, and, you know, it might be 5 to 10 years. You can write off some interest. You know, you can take a little money off your taxes over the next few years as you depreciate it and write off that interest. But there's going to come a day and a time when somebody is once again going to be willing to pay $800,000 for that property.
You know, I've been hearing that that out in Maricopa, that houses were selling for $200,000, $300,000 and now down in the 40s. Same thing out in Queen Creek?
Yeah, Queen Creek, it's really... I mean, they built that place. They built Queen Creek, and, I mean, when all the prices were skyrocketing through the roof, I guess it looked and seemed like some kind of a good idea. But, I mean, I've talked to some people that actually bought properties out there,
mm-hmm.
and regardless of the real estate market, they're like, what was I thinking? The commute
yeah.
is a nightmare.
Yeah.
It's an absolute nightmare. I mean, their eight-hour day becomes 10 hours, 11 hours. Ah, boy.
Well, brother, your life lesson on what how you're interfacing with your realtor is something that we talk about at Trading Faith all the time, is that once you learn to think like a buyer, then you start to realize that everything that the market is doing is exactly what we've been functioning in our whole life. And stop believing the lie that the market is random and chaotic when, in fact, it's made up of men, which we are part of, and man is going to continue to act and do what man has been doing, which is to look at good prices. You understand the dynamic of, you know, see obstacles, understand what the, see the objectives, understand what the obstacles are, understand that activity and interest is really what the guy's job is, because that's going to create buyers. Good stuff, brother. I bet the realtor was... I wouldn't be surprised if he walks away from that and he adds that now into his...
Right.
I wouldn't be surprised at all. In fact, you could ask him that question. Say, hey, just kind of off the sideline, have you taken that concept and integrated it into your presentation? I'll guarantee you he'll say yes. Because his job is to create interest and activity, and buyers will come from that. I will do whatever it takes to create interest and activity.
I got an email this morning,
mm-hmm.
and I clicked on it. I'm not going to bring up the name yet because I don't want to put something out onto the airwaves that might be a bad thing or a scheme or a scam or
okay.
whatever. So I'm going to actually research it myself for the benefit of anyone who... in our audience, it might benefit, but it's a company, and I know there are other companies like this, but this one seems somehow unique, and their deal seems better. They fund traders. They will put you in a simulator, and once you achieve they've got a formula. You know, you trade one contract and. You show that you are a profitable trader,
mm-hmm.
and then they allow you to go live one contract with their money,
mm-hmm.
and then as you build equity, too, and then they've got a payout schedule that is, you can actually, I mean, once you're really cooking, you can earn as much as 90% of the profits. Now, again, it's one of those sound too good to be true kind of things, because I know there's some people sitting out there going, gee, I wish I had, you know, more money to trade with, whatever.
Right.
So they're doing a webinar tomorrow, and they wanted me to attend their webinar, and et cetera. So
sounds interesting.
I'm going to investigate it.
Yeah.
In fact, if you want, I will shoot you over a link so you could, in fact, go to the webinar, too, if you want.
You know, I have class at 6 o'clock our time, but if it's not a conflict, I'd love to go.
Yeah, I think it's at like 4 Eastern.
Yeah.
I'll shoot you over a link.
Shoot me a link. I'd love to go to it.
And we'll see if it's, you know. And I've already put myself in their shoes. Okay, why would they do this? How could they benefit? And the way they've structured it and the rule set that they have,
mm-hmm.
It's profitable for both. It's good for both parties. You know, they're not going to get, they're not getting, their risk management is pretty tight, so they're not going to get taken to the cleaners by somebody that can't trade and is going to lose a whole bunch of money.
Right.
It's kind of like they're on top of you, man.
Right.
You're either making money or you're not.
Right.
Now, most people, I'm going to assume, at some point, going to walk away from them. Or maybe not. Maybe some people want that peace of mind. Yeah, I'm a good trader, but I really like, and yeah, I'm giving them, you know, 20% of my profits or 30% of my profits, but I don't have anything at risk.
Mm-hmm.
No.
You're listening to CFRN, the Christian Financial Radio Network.